You caught me. How's it going, man?
Hey, David.
I was just saying to Matt that your his boy, Matt's friend, who did all this incredible music, really nailed it.
Chris Brune, yeah. I this one, they've all grown on me quite a lot, but I will say this one is hitting for me a lot lately. His solo is
it's badass. I was saying to Matt, I've been spending a lot of time at my local honky tonk, which I'm very lucky it's pretty close by. So I spent a decent amount of time there, and it's great, especially to see bands like Tuesday nights or something like that when it's a little bit less busy. It's really fun.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been really living that like honky tonk socialism mindset, and I like having those interests in these shows because it puts me in that headspace.
Yeah. Oops, I didn't mean to share that quite yet.
A little preview.
Yeah. I don't know. I've seen Chris play. Not only is he my friend, he's one of the most amazing guitar players that I've ever seen in person. Just can absolutely shred, and he does all sorts of different styles, which is why I knew he was the perfect for this, because I knew I could just say, give us some Stevie Ray Vaughan, and he'd be able to go get it. And there's something about that when it dive bombs in the blues, when you pedal off that like bass note, the low string, and you bend it, it's very very satisfying. I haven't seen live music that was super satisfying like that since Chicago. When I saw some blues there, which was very fun.
But for the TMBS show or just another
for trip? TMBS show, yep.
Oh, man, that was a good trip. That was around my birthday, so I was in October. I don't know why, one of those like Facebook algorithms or whatever was showing us some pics of Gene. We should get Gene on the show soon.
Yeah, we should.
But Gene just was taking these hilarious like gonzo photos of you, me, and Michael. I don't know if you remember these.
Yeah, yeah.
But like none of us look good in any of them because they're literally, he would just like throw his phone in front of your face and take a shot and then put it on Instagram. But anyways, I was getting, those reminders of those photos today for whatever reason is cracking up. That was the Chicago show was a lot of fun.
I love Chicago, yeah. We did a lot of we met it. Yeah, we met at that. Was it Thai food or something?
Yeah, we got Thai food before. Michael and I got some really good tacos afterwards, actually.
Oh, really?
That's the thing about Chicago. I mean, I know the Chicago folks already know this, but people who haven't spent time there aren't from there. Chicago has a really legit Mexican scene. Like, world class. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I miss Chicago. Let's move. Is Prescott, is he Texas guy, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if those bushes, they get around.
No, he was a railroad commissioner.
Wow.
Which, sounds like a goofy job.
Yeah, I mean, is it what
but it's extremely important. No. It's like, it's the big one. It's, because you run a small industry here, oil. So it's a very important position that has a name that sort of makes it like a cute thing you give to your kids. Like, yes, son, you're the railroad commissioner. But yeah, let's pull this up because it's pretty good.
So we were saying before, like, we don't know for certain that this isn't somebody rat fucking George Prescott Bush and making these. Because, like, okay, it seems apparently like this is George Prescott Bush swag. Sam Braddock says here, I missed out on this George P. Bush swag. The Koozie says, again, it says, this is the only, this is quoting Trump. This is the only Bush that likes me. This is the Bush that got it right. I like him.
Incredible. I love this so much because you think, it's a lot easier to be George P. Bush out there. But to have to debase yourself like this publicly is very, very funny to me. I mean, that's a pretty exceptional moment in your life to have to do that after somebody insulted your mother. And your father,
and yeah,
your uncle,
like even your copy there is like, oh, I'm the good one in the family, and fuck the rest of my family. George Prescott, we would not know who the fuck you were without those people, buddy. Like,
yeah, no, exactly. And I wanted to note a couple things. Is that one? I'm incorrect. He wasn't railroad commissioner. He was land commissioner. But he is extremely unpopular with even Republicans in the base right now. And I can't go over it right now because I can't remember all the details, but specifically about something to do with the Alamo and like moving a memorial on the grounds of the Alamo, which people are real pissed about. And I can't remember all the ifs, ands, and buts about why. That's and whatever. Hilarious. I don't think it was him being particularly like woke or anything like that. I think it was just like, you know, don't mess with our sacred spaces. But anyways, he's not somebody who's beloved by the right in the state of Texas right now. So he's trying to juice up those bona fides. And I got to say, it's another thing that's so amazing about Trump. I'll tell you all, I'll admit when I was wrong. When Trump came down that escalator, I was like, there's no way this is happening. One, because most of you are like, oh, Donald Trump's goofy as hell. But I also was thinking to myself, there's nothing that Southerners hate more other than just like a Democrat than a like Yankee New York real estate guy. And boy, I was wrong as hell, obviously. But it's so funny to see how much Trump still cucks the like the powerful GOP families. You know, the Bush family, obviously the most notable of them. So much so that somebody ran a campaign against your family members. Really brutal and nasty stuff, which I relished. I loved.
Oh, it was great. That was just halcyon days before Trump, before the actual primary when it had to be about Hillary. Yeah, unbelievable. Trump said big fat mistake about the Iraq war. Me and my friend stood up and cheersed our scotch glasses that was said. I mean
all that stuff was a lot of fun to watch. And it's amazing now though to see Trump, you know, for the most part, disgraced in like general popular culture, but still so important, especially to this like hardcore right-wing base that is energized right now across the country, not just in Texas, obviously. So much so that this guy has to go up there and differentiate himself from his father and being like more loyal to, you talk about the party family values, Jesus Christ.
And you know what's crazy is like they're doing this at a time where Trump is at his most insane still.
He's at his weakest.
So this is an article in National Review. Not my favorite publication. Charles Cook, not my favorite. He's a British conservative. So he has a little bit more gravitas. But he writes this article here.
They love those British conservatives.
They really do.
They got a soft spot for them.
Like, Charlie, how governor, you can have a gun. It's okay. That's basically Charles Cook.
As if it's like a novelty, sorry to slow this down, but as if it's a novelty to be like a conservative or a right-wing British person. Like, that's like their whole brand. They exported that shit to the world.
Exactly. <yeah. laughs> We got it from. So here's the start of this, though. It's interesting. 2 days ago, the New York Times' Maggie Haberman reported that Donald Trump has been telling a number of people he's in contact with that he expects he will get reinstated by August. In response, many figures on the right inserted their fingers in their ears and started screaming about fake news. Instead, they should have listened because Haberman is reporting what's correct. I can attest from speaking to an array of different sources, which, by the way, name them, pussy. Mm-hmm. That Donald Trump does indeed believe quite genuinely he, along with former Senators David Perdue and Martha McSally, will get reinstated. Will get reinstated the summer after audits of the 2020 elections in Arizona, Georgia, and a handful of other states had been completed. I can attest too that Trump is trying hard to recruit journalists, politicians, and other influential figures to promulgate this belief, not as fundraising tool or an infantile bit of trolling or a trial balloon, but as a fact. So that's where Trump's at. He thinks he's going to be reinstated.
How legit do you think that is?
I think Donald Trump actually believes he's going to get reinstated. I see, like, the reporting that he just spends all his time on TV, like, flipping channels, seeing who's, like, most, like, supportive of him. But I also think he's probably in touch with, he must notice how, like, the QAnon or the MAGA sort of, like, whatever that shit is. They also think this. Like, right? They're synchronized. And so, I don't know. I wouldn't rule out I wouldn't rule out Trump trying to egg something on. I mean, I will say before this, I was surprised because I thought Trump would the part of him that didn't want to be president would be happy to be out of it. Mm-hmm. And I guess the part that I am a little bit surprised at is his desire to get back in office, which I think only makes sense. I mean, if he's some sort of like paranoid about like he needs to
he needs immunity.
Something like that.
I don't know. I mean, I mean, I could see that maybe Trump is delusional enough to believe it. I will say, and maybe because, you know, the one difference between you and I is that, like, even though we don't, both of us aren't really like enraptured with this world, is like you do a daily show, like politics show, you know, that deals a little bit more with this stuff than I do. So like I get to like be blissfully unaware of a lot of like the kind of congressional politics discussions and Trump shit, which I'm very lucky for. But whenever I've seen these reports that Trump is like believes that he's actually come back in office, I have a hard time believing it, but I do love that for him. I really do. You know what I mean? I think that's a great, like, you know, believe in yourself, Bubba. Like, you got this.
And what's like, it's especially interesting. It'd be one thing if he was like the party's still with him, and I don't think they're with him enough to actually like try.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that at all. But I think they're with him enough to not, again, say shit when he starts egging shit on to the point where it gets dangerous.
They know they can't touch him.
Right. They're fucked if they do.
But they know they don't want to work for him in that way. So that's why they're doing this koozie stuff. Because honestly, like, I will say this, like, you know, fuck the Republicans. They got cooked by Trump. Hilarious. Blah, blah. But so did the Democrats too. Right. This koozie move by George P. Bush, I'm flipping on it now. I think it's brilliant. Because it's like this is how you get Trump on your side with just the stupidest symbolic kind of stuff like this, right? He's like, oh, they made a koozie about me. You know, they must really love me. It shows that they're loyal, right? Because Trump really is such a superficial and sloppy bitch like that.
Yeah,
that like you can just like, oh, I put T-shirt on, I love Trump. He's like, that's great. You know, they're on my side. And you don't really have to show up for him that much if you just do this kind of stuff, which is embarrassing and demeaning and all that stuff, obviously, but obviously shedding no tears about George P. Bush.
I mean, just to put it in the context of AMLO, right? People like the resistance got let down by AMLO for like not being antagonistic to Trump, but you know, in that there's a completely wise reason for doing that, I guess.
Yeah.
But I just the koozie thing, like, because it obviously brings to mind Ted Cruz and the whole like the family thing. It's just. Yeah, I guess your family is the price.
if you want to do politics like this, you want to work for like one of the most evil parties in the world, save other, you know, probably other than just like the Democratic Party. You got to sell a lot of stuff about yourself and your family out.
So let's move now to Grimes. Maybe get to some questions. About
somebody who's never sold out.
Yeah. So, Grimes, who I won't lie, I enjoyed the album Oblivion years ago. It came out like, I think it's like 2013 at this point, maybe even later ago. Some fun sort of dark synth energy there. Mainly the music. I don't know the lyrics. It's all very ethereal. But I don't like her music enough to like want to revisit it while she's, you know, basically Elon Musk's girlfriend or whatever they are. Wife, are they married now?
Baby mama now.
Baby mama, but okay, maybe not married.
No, they're married. They're married.
Okay, yeah. I guess I'm a little bit behind on whatever like sort of magazine.
I don't miss any of that, dude. I get all the updates.
So, and I don't really know a whole lot about Grimes as a person. I feel like she might have been a rich kid growing up. I feel like I heard that. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But anyway, I'm pretty sure I'm not wrong about that. But let's go to her TikTok. She cut this herself. This isn't like somebody making a compilation of dumb things said about communism. So this is Grimes. And I would love to have bugged her conversations with Elon on this sort of topic. Like, and we'll play this clip as David collects himself here.
I have a proposition for the communists. So typically, most of the communists I know are not big fans of AI. But if you think about it, AI is actually the fastest path to communism. So if implemented correctly, AI could actually theoretically solve for abundance. Like, we could totally get to a situation where nobody has to work. Everybody is provided for with a comfortable state of being, comfortable living. AI could automate all the farming, weed out systematic corruption, thereby bringing us to as close as possible to genuine equality. So basically everything that everybody loves about communism, but without the collective farm. Because let's be real, enforced farming is really not a vibe.
Oh boy. Sorry, I was choking on those words, man. Even like preliminary. All right. I mean, where do we want to start with it? Let's start with the communism stuff, right? Do not let me forget, because I have some hot takes about why Grimes is so devastating for some people, her shift and love with Elon Musk. But I mean, the communism stuff is just absurd. I mean, what is she talking about? The communist that she knows. I can't imagine what kind of political caliber of a person that is, right? It's like, you know, it's the kind of thing that we rail on against constantly as people who think like, oh, politics is like my identity, or it's like a clothing that I get to wear, versus the process that you do with other people. Absolutely insane. And I think, the quick, cheap and easy point to make with Grimes is we live in a world where all of these advances in technology have not improved the lives of working people, of everyday people, but in fact have lined the pockets of people like her fucking husband.
While enclosing those workers.
Sorry?
While enclosing and surveilling those workers and basically continuing them to work as hard as we're working without these commensurate increase in wages.
And any communist worth their salt, I mean, unless it's just purely performative, I'm assuming has some understanding of like dialectics and Marxism, should understand that technology in itself is not some kind of process that's separate from the material relations of society. To put that concretely, if somebody owns all the machines, they get to use those to extract surplus value from the labor of the people who are operating those machines. That's capitalism 101. It was capitalism 101 when they invented mechanized processes for producing clothing, food, you name it, right? Why do you think that that's not the case with, you know, artificial intelligence? It's history is pointing in the same direction with all of this. I'm sorry, like I'm much more like amenable to like the Andrew Yang freak out about AI than I am to this kind of utopian fixation that is just going to solve all of our problems without any kind of political struggle.
Right, right. Which, I mean, doesn't address basic questions a communist would ask, which is like, who owns the AI? Like, who's directing this AI? Or, and I think I'll just guess what Grimes would say. I think she would say, getting a little bit of feedback, but I think she would say that the AI supersedes humanity. Because it's smarter than humans, which I'd say, like, we already have machines that have all of human information. Like, by certain measures, they are smarter than human beings. Mm-hmm. Tell them to fucking put some legislation together. They can't do that, right? That's not what that's not the kind of smartness that is being made for.
That's a good point.
And we're not going to just reproduce that, like, anytime fucking soon. It's a complete pipe dream. You know, the best way to compute the best thing for everybody is to fucking ask everybody what they want via some sort of democracy. That's it, right? Like that's how you do it. So I'm not surprised that somebody dating a guy that's like extracting valuable minerals thinks that democracy isn't the best way to solve these things. But
yeah, and look, I'm all for like, I don't like, you know, stuff that's too utopian. Just in the sense that I think it like actually depoliticizes struggle, right? Because it's like you're just like fantasizing all the time. It's not productive. But I'm all like, dude, Matt and I have a soft spot. No matter as hard as I try to be a good, cold, analytical Marxist, I have a soft spot for all of that kind of stuff. I love Oscar Wilde's quote. It's like, a map without utopia isn't worth looking at, right? Like, I'm all about that, right? And I think you can use the potential, like, as like a thought experiment, you know, or point that, like, oh, I can imagine a world where people's needs are met and things are much better, and that we don't have to spend all of our time laboring for the profit of someone else, right? I think that that's great, as long as you make the point, which she doesn't hear, that the thing that's stopping that from happening is not the scientific possibility, right? Like the actual constraints of like the physical world, but the constraints of the political world and the economic world. What I mean by that is class society, you know, the class that she's bought into right now is what's preventing us from being able to achieve, or hell, at least aspire to those kind of, you know, that kind of world.
Like, I like the idea that, like, never mind the communist she hangs out, but the capitalists. Like, talk to the capitalists around you, Grimes, and ask them if they want this world where everyone has a rough, equal, like, allocation of resources from the god AI. Like, do you think that's really the way that, no, it's going to be, we need the AI to distribute to the, like, the percentage of society that contributes the most with, right? Like, of course that's how it's going to be designed. Look at this. I mean, pretty sad though. Like, honestly, like, to occasional tweet here or there is one thing, but like, Grimes is not smart. I don't think, unfortunately. Like, and well, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, this is like my hot. Like, Grimes is very frightening to a very specific person. Like, she's frightening and like upsetting, obviously, because she's saying nonsense and she's like, you know, married into this horrible system and horrible person. But she's very, very like upsetting to a kind of like, these are people I spend my time with. I spend my times with, you know, freaks and weirdos and rednecks, right? She is like representative of like the kind of scene girl, countercultural girl or person, right? That we all sort of know from college and high school, right? Who's very radical, very like F the man kind of thing. And facing like, you know, kind of like mid adulthood, mid to early 30s, and making that decision to essentially to buy into the system, you know, marrying a super rich billionaire, start making excuses for it and shedding the clothing of your like radical, you know, of your like earlier radical ambitions. But even worse than that, not just saying like, oh, I've seen the light and like this kind of like more like right wing or conservative like way of life is what I'm accepting, mm-hmm. but actually trying to use like the radical language of like your youth and like your freedom and your rebellion to justify your conservative choices.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I think that for some people it's a very frightening thing, not necessarily because they're saying, oh, I'm doing this. Like, I don't know. So it's something that people definitely don't want to do themselves, and seeing somebody who they have sort of grown up with is like, you know, it's very jolting.
Yeah. Her mother, Sandy Garasino, is a former Crown prosecutor and arts advocate. Her farmer is a former banker who works in the business side of biotech. And so not the science side of biotech, the business side. So.
Oh, there you go.
Interesting.
She didn't have to go too far.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a fall. Let's do some questions before we move on to Jordan Peterson's ghost story.
actually, really looking forward to this. Well, let me make sure. If somebody sent that to me, I want to make sure I shout them out.
All right. I'll go here. Joe Snuffy, since the election, right-wing talking heads have used the left has gone too far framing for every segment. Mm. Details don't matter if people internalize that framing, which seems to be their strategy. How do we deconstruct this framing, and what framing can we offer as a response that isn't just a catalog of the left's failures and defeats? I think framing things is basically necessary, because the truth is we're not going to go too far. There's never going to be a situation under Joe Biden where it's going to be true. Anything Joe Biden does that's salutary is going to be like just barely enough to have been done. And you should applaud it as that. And then the things that he does that he shouldn't have done, it's not the left going too far. It's probably liberal capitalists going too far. What say you, David?
I mean, I think it's definitely correct to recognize that this is a tactic that the right wing does to try to, like, the word I use is like inoculate people from being able to see what's, you know, clearly in front of them by creating this non-threat that the left has gone too far. And obviously using the most insane and impractical definition of the left to include somebody like Joe Biden in it.
Hillary Clinton.
I think when it comes to confronting it, the only way you can confront that is by being able to define ourselves on our own terms.
Yeah.
As long as we're being defined by people like Joe Biden, like it or not, you know, people consider him to be on the left. As long as we're in that situation, we're at a disadvantage. So, like, we can come up with tactics to, you know, to push back against that marginally. But the longer term goal has to be, how do we define ourselves on our own terms, on our own terrain?
Another one from Joe. Here's an idea for how to celebrate reaching the next patron benchmark. Reps for the people. You guys do one push-up for each patron to symbolize how community is pushing the show together. Well, you should have told us this like months ago.
Day one.
Yeah, because we're at what, like 825 now or something?
Right, 815 after the obligatory, you know, drop-off.
Right. I cannot do 800 push-ups. I can't do half.
I don't
that.
Think I could. I probably be good for us to try, though. We could be, you know, we could be the long-haired Jack podcast.
Oh, damn. Now I need to start doing push-ups so I can say, like, I haven't been doing them as we do this live. Anyway, question from Samantha Sider. Matt and David, how do you plan on celebrating White Boy Summer now that COVID is winding down? Specifically White Boy Summer, I think I'm going to go down to Virginia and do a little filmmaking at the William Byrd II plantation.
Jesus Christ.
The literary hangover. But that's not certain yet. But that's one. When you say White Boy Summer, that's what I sort of think of.
Well, I mean, my big news is I've picked it out, and I just have to figure out how to get it here. But I'm moving on from my beloved Weber Smoky Mountain grill, and I'm upgrading to a full big old offset. You know, one of the big metal piece. You know, pieces of hunks of metal.
I'm imagining like a lunar rover.
I wish. I mean, my budget is very small. I'm getting, for people who know, I'm getting one of those guys from Academy, the old Pecos smoker, but I'm very, very excited. That's my big White Boy Summer celebration. I'm gonna be spending a lot of time in the backyard smoking the meats.
smoking Sweet Baby Ray's. Let's see here. When will Griscom Stream Live Edition come to a city near me?
I don't know, man. I'm ready to do it whenever. I mean, what, you know, I'm ready.
Question from Irish Leah. Matt, I come from the same small town as JFK's ancestors. What is your theory on his assassination, and have you seen Parenti's lecture on it? I only learned about Parenti's lecture on it like today or yesterday. And that's another thing Parenti is better on than good old Noam Chomsky on.
Have you seen it?
I haven't. No, I do plan to watch it though.
That might be a good bonus episode content.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, my theory. I don't have any super definite theories into what definitely happened in Dealey Plaza, but I do think that investigating, say, just Lee Harvey Oswald's connections to, for instance, like his time in the military, his time going to Russia, his time, like, tangentially connected to the U2 spy plane, like. I think he's some sort of plant, some sort of intelligence agency operative. The guy is literally like George de Morenshield was a family he was like close friends with in Dallas. George de Morenshield is a old European aristocrat, like information peddler that had George Bush's H.W. Bush's name in his Rolodex. George H.W. Bush, of course, had a CIA before president. So like, I think there's, I never want to get super definite, and I don't even know if Oswald is a patsy or if he fired the shot or if there was multiple shooters. Cause I honestly think like, you can get too into the technical details there, but like when you zoom the aperture out, there's all sorts of insanely weird stuff that I think say a lot about clandestine power in America.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't really have too many big opinions on this. I'm always interested to hear what Matt has to say and other people who are really into it, because it almost seems like too overwhelming.
I think that's what it is.
I have a family member who recently, you know, got a job clearing out. Unfortunately, somebody passed away, you know, clearing out somebody's house, you know, of all of their extra possessions and stuff. Anyways, you know, they were seeing if I was interested in any of their books, because the guy had a bunch of books, and he had three bookcases full of JFK history and like theory. And I was like, boy, that is just a gold mine of you know, either coincidences or evidence, right?
Well, and or like planted bullshit. Like I read a bunch of JFK books and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I literally like suspect, like Vincent Bugliosi, who wrote Case Closed with Gerald Posner, who I also don't trust, which is weird because like I don't trust that book, but like some of his other work seems good. But Vincent Bugliosi is the famous one who wrote like a book this thick on the Warren Commission. I don't have it. Oh yeah, I do. It's over there. I can fucking see it. And it is all just getting into the minutiae of trajectories and bullet fragments and stuff like that. And doesn't go into any of the questions of like Jack Ruby or like these clear mafia connections.
So, what, you think those are plants?
I think there's a whole bunch of plants in that.
Wow. I mean, that's double decker conspiracy, right?
That's why I never wanted to get super deep into it and why I take a more like indefinite approach, because
I mean, not to be too annoying or devil's advocate, it's like plants maybe, or just people realize it's a gold mine and they just write lazy books that you at this point are already too much of an expert to be bamboozled by these kind of lazy accounts.
I think there's a reasonable case to be made that especially certain figures that regularly contribute like have connections to either like Dulles's or like those sorts of figures and those sorts of official connections and stuff like that. I don't know. And also you have to worry about the people who are actually doing good work and themselves getting played by the feds and with fake information, stuff like that. Like it is a complete fucking clusterfuck, the JFK assassination, but it is fascinating. And then I think the David Talbot Devil's Chessboard is good. Recent, if people want a recommendation, the one, the family, always recommends is JFK and the Unspeakable. Like Bobby Kennedy Jr. recommends that one. That one is interesting because like that one leans heavily on the JFK was killed because he was going to end the Cold War, and I think there you could look at a certain speech, I think the American University speech, that could show some interesting
go Eagles baby that.
The American University,
I mean, that's my alma mater.
Oh, damn. Are you familiar with his American University speech?
Only just because they have pictures of it everywhere. I mean, I know like generally, like it seemed that there was a kind of shift.
Yeah. And then
I'm not an expert.
Yeah. And like, I get a little bit leery of that one. Cause one, it's very theology driven. Cause these are the Catholics. And also it is the one that makes the JFK look the best, that he was murdered for wanting to end the Cold War, which like that's a great myth. And if there's some truth to it, that's interesting, but I don't know how much it is.
Have you ever seen Christopher Hitchens' criticisms of the Oliver Stone documentary?
No, I haven't, but I know he was generally like pretty critical of like the Camelot thing in general.
Both him and Alexander Coburn are very much against the JFK assassination theories in the way that, especially of that thesis, that like JFK was trying to stop imperialism, so they stopped him from, you know, so they killed him.
Because I think there's a bunch of like JFK alumni who wrote a whole bunch of books to that effect, and it was all self-serving. I don't want to say all self-serving. Like, there might be a grain of truth to it, but like, talk is cheap, and like, you know, private talk is one thing. You should have done something about it. But yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I
think we should do this Parenti thing, man.
I'm down. I'm
strapped in. I'm very interested. I really like, you know, just in the sense of in transparency, like once because I was such a Hitchens fan when I first like really started thinking about this stuff, hearing the Hitchens and then seeing that echoed by Coburn sort of set me on a perspective on the JFK stuff. But it seems like it's interesting, if nonetheless, like, it's interesting even if it's all just pure fantasy, because it's a really interesting.
Well, you get a very good look at the national security state of the time through it. And like, this is, I love Noam Chomsky, but like, it turned me against him briefly. I've said this before when I came across him in that context. So I'm like, don't fucking tell me what to be interested and curious about. Like, I got annoyed by it. you know, the way that FTV people are feeling about him now too. Edwin, David, and Matt, what does good Marxist sci-fi look like in your opinion? I love in the Mass Effect Remastered trilogy and imagine myself as a mini space Fidel Castro when I'm playing. My Commander Shepard's journey is from virgin liberal humanist to Chad commie interspeciesist intergalacticist. Well, I don't read a lot of science fiction, unfortunately.
Have you played Mass Effect though?
Yeah, I played the original one a lot.
Have you played the other two?
I'm pretty sure I've played both of them, but less and less as the series gone down.
All right, so I'm just looking something up and I'll share it on the screen because it's so funny. I mean, I love Mass Effect. I actually have to say it's probably one of my favorite games of all time. I'm a huge fan of Dragon Age and all of those games. But Mass Effect has always been one of the more interesting ones for me. I think that that's probably one of my favorite sci-fis. I don't know about Marxist or anything there in Mass Effect. I'd be curious to hear what, you know, your read is on it, Edwin. I mean, in general, like imagining societies that have like incredible technological abilities, have levels of cohesion. I mean, there's a lot of emancipatory potential there, I think, as narratives. I don't read sci-fi novels, and I would love to watch more sci-fi movies and television shows, but in my experience, there's not that many that are good. I'm nerdy enough to be interested in that, is what I'm saying, but I haven't found the content out there. But do you know who Tali is, Matt, in the Mass Effect games?
No.
So this is one of the, so, you know, a big part of like Mass Effect, all those kind of games is like, you know, the romantic aspect.
Right.
You gotta fall in love with the ladies. Uh-huh. My girlfriend makes fun of me so much because she thinks like, because I always make a big deal about it when she's like walking by, like, oh, I'm trying to sleep with this person, but I'm worried that you might find out that I'm cheating on them. obviously, there's a lot more of the games than that. But anyways, it's fun. And it's a fun part of the game. Anyways, Tali, for people who don't know, this is just a really funny thing that they did in the Mass Effect game. So I just think it's probably one of the funnier things that's happened in video game history. And I love when nerdy people get like really pissed. I'm just trying to pull up the best photograph to show this. Okay, I think I have it. So, you know, Tali is like this interesting kind of character who's of a species that's been in space for so long. Their homeworld is destroyed, right? They've been in space for so long that they have to wear these body suits to survive. Okay. If I just share this, how do I share this?
You can chat it to me and I'll put it.
Okay. Up. I'm going to send you two different things then. Sure. Here we go. So anyway, so she has to wear this. This is so nerd. I hope people... so this is the first thing. They have to wear these body suits to survive because they're like immunocompromised, basically, right? If they get exposed to any germ, you know, they can die. And do you have this picture up real quick just so people can see? Yeah, there you go. So that's Tali and that's Shepard, who's like, you know, the main character in the game, right? And that's all you need to sell. I just want to show what she looks like. So throughout the entire game, you know, for hours and hours and hours of playthrough, people are very much like, she's one of the most popular love interests in the game. Right.
Right.
But part of the deal with that is that you can never see her face, or you can never even be intimate, because if you were to be intimate with her, like, you know, she'd die from getting a disease or something like that. Right? You understand why this like works with the video game crowd, by the way. But in Mass Effect 3, I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler for people, but in Mass Effect 3, if you romance her again, it develops to a level where she, because she's a brilliant engineer, figures out a way to create like a contamination-free zone so that you can like be together.
We're about to contaminate that contamination.
And there's nothing sexier than like, you know, your love interest being like, I've created a special room where you can like, you know, get together. Anyways, they don't show anything like that happening, but they do reveal her face, right? And let me put this in here for you, and you have to click on the right one. So let me tell you which picture to click on. It's the, if you got to scroll down a little bit, and it's the one where he's holding the photograph of her.
That's what she looks like.
And just make that big. This is what's in the redesign, right? But if you go back, Matt, and then you look at the picture above, and you see how there's one on the left and one on the right. Yeah. That is the one on the right is what they put in the original game. And then of course, you know, being like a very popular video game, people went and looked it up and found out that it was just a stock photo of girl, like, you know, in Sunset. And they just put like a purple filter over it. Right. Like, you know, this is like a big ass game that makes millions and billions of dollars. And this is something that people are really excited for. And some guy just took an image of somebody in the park and put a purple filter on it and a stronger lens flare. Yeah. And that was like the big face reveal. I don't know. So that might have been a little bit of a tangent. Really funny. Because people were pissed. Like, and I guess the new redesign isn't much better.
That's the crunch, right? You hear about video games, like development hell. They have 2 weeks to ship. And it's like,
dude, I can't imagine, something? Honestly. It actually really does sound like a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. No, it's complete, you know. It's just amazing how much these things fucking print money. And like how valuable they are to monopolies like Microsoft and Sony. And it's people who are doing what they loved and getting punished for it, basically.
Getting really punished for it.
Okay. That's so funny. I want to do this quick a gender reveal that went wrong.
Oh, yeah.
This is and I would just point everyone who I would be shocked if gender reveal enthusiasts are among the audience for this, but the person who originally did it, which is just like, oh, I had a cake made with the inside blue or whatever because I found out the results and then we filmed, you know, my husband cutting the cake or whatever. She regrets doing that and how big of a thing this
who would have thought that something that simple would have just created so much pain and suffering.
I mean, we talk about how like things get culture warred. Like, I mean, I do think people acting like gender reveals are just like, oh, there's no reason this became a thing in the context of like transphobia and like that sort of thing. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, it's just a fucking coincidence. Anyway, this is the most satisfying gender reveal I certainly have ever seen.
Oh.
Oh my God. Oh, shit, that's a fail. What a fail.
And look, Mom, I'm sorry that it was your fault that the balloon flew away. Ultimately, and don't get too stressed.
Just the amount of screaming that's going on. Just like that screaming, shrieking the entire video. Like, this is, I mean, like, I understand why some people don't like the tradition. I personally would not be interested in doing something like that. But, you know, let's just take it for what it is for most people. It's like, oh, this is a fun way for me to share some good news with my friends. And for just like this simple, like, desire has just because of, all of the different factors at play, just like feeling like you need to record it and it needs to be some huge, huge, huge spectacle.
Yeah.
And just like kind of general incompetence of so many people.
Yeah, it's you got the cameras out. The kid is not the daughter is not handling all the attention and stuff well at all. And I just it's like the thing is like I'm just imagining like if that was my wife, like what do you say at that moment? Like,
yeah,
how pissed she is as she realizes like she just lost track of the inflatable balloon.
That was when did they just yell out this? It's a boy, right? Like that.
Yeah. Just after
I saw it floating off into the sky, that's what I would do.
Oh man, I everything about that it's so perfect that I'm suspicious again that it's some sort of plan. But that if that was scripted, that little girl played her part incredibly well. Let's move on to a few more questions. Irish Liam, what do you think is the nature of the relationship between Peter Thiel and the Weinstein brothers? I think the relationship is professional. We know Eric is his employee at Thiel Capital. I have a hunch. I don't have proof or any sort of indication, but I would guess, if I had to, that when Brett Weinstein was making his kerfuffle at Evergreen, first, not about the day of absence, but first about diverse hiring standards, and then a year or so later about the day of absence, I would be surprised if at no point between him doing that and going on Tucker Carlson's show to talk about it, that he had no interaction with Peter Thiel. At least that's just a hunch I have. I don't know that it's like a 75% probability, but if there was odds and I knew that we could find out the truth one or the other, I'd be interested to know. Because I don't know how Peter Thiel was the first guest on The Portal, Eric Weinstein's podcast. Like this isn't hidden. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so yeah, I mean, and so I guess that answers that. Champagne Communist, if you all had to put money on it, assuming these UFOs are breaking the laws of physics, they are, like officials from multiple countries say they are, do you think it's classified human technology or do you think it's something not from this planet? I tweeted out a video. I forget, was it the SoFast video or whatever? I don't think they're breaking the laws of physics. I don't care what the officials in multiple countries say. I think that, like the documents that were released from the Pentagon with the video that imply this might be a balloon captured with like a gimbal camera on a jet going very far away, and the back behind that jet is moving very quickly to make it look. I think it's something like that. Maybe something is breaking the laws of physics, and we just see no indication about of it apart from a few videos released by the Pentagon, but. My thing is I think it's not even that advanced technology. I think it's a weather balloon. And if it is advanced technology, then I mean, we saw that with the stealth bombers, right? Like those were reported as UFOs for years before they were officially released. I think it's something like that. We've been testing out supersonic things before, but I think it looks like a balloon. And I think the other stuff looked like jets. I haven't seen any video that are actually that compelling.
For me, I think in general, do I think that there's life out in the universe? Yes. Do I think that there's probably highly advanced life? Yes. Do I think that highly advanced life out there would be particularly worried about being captured? Like documented, like captured on video or things like that, being afraid of being seen by, human beings. I really, really don't. So that's just my general suspicion of a lot of this stuff. For me, honestly, I'm interested in it as much as the next person, but I haven't seen much more to sort of like make me feel like this is finally it, right? And I think like the kind of like assumption that we have with the UFOs is that they're supposed to be this kind of like, I mean, well, UFOs are unidentified flying objects, right? Aliens is what I'm talking about. You know, that like any kind of experience that we have with aliens is going to be some kind of clandestine secret meeting, you know, that will be like slowly exposed. I just don't see why a super advanced species out there would be particularly worried about being captured on, you know, CCTV or like a nice iPhone camera or something like that.
Yeah. I like what Sean McCarthy of Grubstaker said, which is like, talk about the JFK files you're sitting on. Like, I don't give a fuck about this. Like,
full circle, baby.
And I just want, I'll play this Go Fast video from Mick West. Cause honestly, like when I see this stuff, I come from a place where I fucking love the X-Files. I want to believe in this stuff. And yeah. I've been burned too many goddamn times. And it's always the same thing, which is that stuff can look like it's going way faster than it is in the sky, because the sky, you don't have points of reference. Right? Like,
yeah.
Here's this. There's a short video from this Mick West guy here.
Fraction of the field of view covered by the object. This gives us a size of about 6 or 7 feet.
Off for long, without a source of lift.
They notice that the craft appears cold on the infrared, and the narrator says,
"There is no known aircraft that can stay aloft for long without a source of lift and propulsion."
Which is false, because there's an obvious type of aircraft, a helium balloon, which appears cold in infrared and can stay aloft for hours, even days. It can also look like it's moving really fast over the ground when it's actually just parallax. Here's another example where a balloon is clearly just a balloon. It's also barely moving, and it looks like it's moving really fast.
The
balloons themselves don't reflect radar, but weather balloons carry radar reflectors, which will be very easy for the range-finding radar to lock onto. And finally, in the Defense Department's Form 1910 that authorized public release of this video, the description...
Damn, you're being such a buzzkill right now, Matt.
It says fucking balloons!
Go fast.
Not 100%, but it's a quite plausible answer that people are ignoring. Maybe
that's what I'm saying. Like, I get it. Like, we want to imagine that there's some fucking crazy shit because we're like, that is going to open up the Marvel Cinematic Universe for us. Doesn't exist. It's sorry. Not here. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, y'all.
I'm sorry too.
Officially, you heard it here first.
But I've been upsetting the UFO crowd since.
Honestly, I have been surprised. I don't know if people have caught on to this, but this has angered people more than anything we've ever done. I think.
It's been like the entire time from working on Majority Report. Honestly, like if there's one community I've been pissing up, it's been the UFO. It's
the UFO stuff. Yeah, I mean, you heard it here. Matt thinks that you are all stupid and rubes.
Look, I just think like, look, here's like, if one of these things buzzes a city, I will be interested in. I will tune back in.
So do you like? Okay, but. Just as a question, like, you know, so we were saying like the JFK stuff is interesting, even if it's not legit, just because you get this mirror. What do you think about the like History Channel, like UFO aliens, Chariot of the Gods style stuff?
The exact precise opposite. I think I think the CIA, when people start talking about the intelligence economy, I think honestly, a motive for propaganda in our mass information age now is just to create noise. And occupy people's time until they die, and so they don't get radicalized in that time period. And that's what I think the UFO stuff is, honestly.
That's interesting.
And I think there's also another message, which is, let's say these things. I think that what the Go Fast one is a balloon. I think the other ones are jets. And if the other ones are jets, I think what the message is. One, there's like the message we get from a psychological operation standpoint, which is like people are obsessed. They're Fox Mulder, it's the X-Files out there. But I also think it's like we're showing Russia or China, whoever the fuck made these, that we know you have these. Mm-hmm. We caught them on fucking tape, and you know what we're showing you, and we're just gonna put it all out there. Like those things are way more plausible to me than the laws of physics have been broken and we're being visited by aliens.
It's probably true.
I don't know. It is. I don't know why I enjoy being a buzzkill about this stuff.
I mean, it's funny.
Joe Snuffy, whenever a billionaire or billionaire paramour is telling human beings how to human, I ask, why is the food talking?
There you go.
Oh, this is a good question. David, what do you think of Minari?
Oh, damn. You still haven't seen it, right?
Nope.
I suggest it, man. I thought it was a really fun film. I mean, it was very sweet and sentimental. I didn't even think I texted Matt something to that effect. Yeah. But I thought it was a really nice film. I thought it was a really interesting way to look at, you know, this country, sort of like ideas of like belonging and things like that. I thought it was really nice. I mean, one thing that's really interesting about the film is sort of flipping a kind of Western chauvinist view. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if you watch a lot of this, you know, especially stuff in like 70s, 80s, and 90s, anytime, you know, you deal with people, you know, from Asia, East Asia, like Japanese people, Chinese people, Korean people, there's this like kind of way of treating them as like, oh, well, they're very superstitious, right? They have all these like super old, bizarre, weird traditions. Mm.
Confucius said.
And in the film, right, there's this Korean family, Korean American family, who moves out to Arkansas and tries to make a farm work at a location where it just has never worked before. But the people who are the most superstitious and bizarre and strange in the film are the people from Arkansas, not in a kind of demeaning way either, but like, you know, they believe in all these kind of magical, like, you know, you're using the stick trick to find where the water is. There's a guy who puts a huge cross on his back every day and walks into town, right? Like all of this kind of like over the top superstitious stuff. Yeah, yeah. It's like the Arkansans, people who are doing that, which I don't know. I thought was like an interesting.
So the superstition is very interesting. Like in North Dakota, literally people, this was peddled to settlers that, I forget the phrase, but rain follows the plow. Mm. So go plow your land and that's going to free up some stuff and it's going to rain, right? Like, which is obviously not how rain works.
Yeah. No, I mean, but anyways, I highly suggest that. I haven't read any like big negative reviews. I know some people in our kind of like left Jackman world weren't the biggest fans of it, but I thought it was a fun film. Also, it was nice to go to movie theater too, I have to say.
Oh yeah.
It was my first, you know, movie theater since the pandemic. So that was a nice time too.
I was thinking about The Quiet Place too. Cause the last one I saw in theaters was, Invisible Man.
Dude, the last movie I saw in theaters was the last Star Wars.
I don't even know. See, I don't even know when. How long ago did that come out?
I mean, it was right. It was that, you know, Christmas. Oh, okay.
It could have been 20.
I know. Matt's a big anti Star Wars guy. Matt's against UFOs and Star Wars, y'all.
I'm anti UFO, but I just don't really think about Star Wars. Yeah, Joe, I think this is basically where I'm at. I've yet to hear a good reason for me to care about this UFO psyop nonsense. Mm-hmm. The psyop and that's not worth caring about, or we are utterly fucked because the species is capable of manipulating localized gravity enough to use it for propulsion is operating here. If that's the case, we have no real way to defend ourselves if they're hostile, and if they aren't, doesn't matter. So why should I care? I mean, yeah. I think look, if we can get some access to that gravity manipulating technology, we might be able to cut our emissions drastically. So I would start caring if they're.
I mean, it'd be great if it, yeah. I mean, it'd be very interesting if it was happening.
I just asked them if they have carbon capture. and then you heard it here first, folks. David Griscom officially has a tally body pillow.
Oh, I will not be slandered like that on my own show.
Folks, I think we're going to call it there. We had a fun night tonight.
Yeah, it was a good time. Kurt was great.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Kurt's great. People should go check out. He had a little bit more time with the with Ben last fall to go into the deep history of Mexico, which, you know, like the way that democracy is invoked in this country is like by the Washington Post saying it dies in the darkness. Like democracy is actively like trying to emerge in Mexico.
Yeah.
And yeah, very. I love Kurt's perspective on that.
No, I thought it was really, I really appreciated it. Oh, wait, before we go, I just want, Kowalski has something he wants to correct you on.
Okay, good.
Rain follows the plow is accurate. You plow roughly when the ground thaws, which occurs right around the same time seasonal rains come.
Okay. I mean, I understand the sequence of that. I did see that in the context of how arid North Dakota could get more rain. So I see where you come from, but I don't think it was being deployed with that. Maybe I misread it, though. I will defer to Kowalski. Check out Prairie Fire. He's probably correcting me from his combine right now. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, awesome, y'all. I really appreciate everybody. Sunday or Monday, we haven't decided yet. We're going to be doing, a live watch commentary of Leo Panitch taking on two right wingers on has socialism ever worked? So looking forward to that.
Yeah, and then we'll have to do the JFK one.
Really looking forward to that
too. After that. So yeah, see you, patrons.
See y'all.